The following lecture was delivered at the 17th Annual National Jewish Retreat in Palm Desert, California, a project of the Rohr Jewish Learning Institute. We hope you enjoy it. We encourage you to visit jretreat.com for information on upcoming retreats. Dr. Sonia Lubomirsky now presents her lecture, Time to Flourish.
I define happiness the way that most researchers define happiness, is that it has two components. And the first is an emotional component, the experience of positive emotions, like affection, pride, serenity, joy, enthusiasm, tranquility. All of those are positive emotions, and happy people experience more of them. But also, the second component of happiness is having a sense that your life is good, that you're progressing towards your life goals, that you are satisfied with your life. So I basically like to call this being happy in your life and being happy with your life. You really need sort of both of those components to be a truly happy person. And I should add that hundreds of studies have shown that people who are happy in their lives and with their lives report being healthier, having better relationships, being more productive and creative at work. So basically, happiness is not just something that sort of feels good. It's not just about pleasure. When you're happy, good things come to you. So research shows that happier people are better leaders and negotiators. They live longer. They're more religious and spiritual. Their companies that have happier workers are more profitable. So happiness is not just something that sort of feels good to you, it's also good for your families, for your communities, for your companies, organizations. Because a lot of people think that happiness is like a selfish thing, that they don't want to focus on their own happiness. It's actually not selfish to focus on your happiness. And by the way, the causality goes both ways, of course. So being married makes people happier, but happier people are more likely to find a marriage partner, right? So we know this intuitively, but also research supports that. There's lots and lots of research in this area, but I just want to spend a little time talking about happiness and health. So happiness is good for health. I mean, that's something that sort of everyone cares about. So I just want to tell you a little bit about that happier people live longer and are healthier. And so basically what I'm going to tell you about is a whole bunch of longitudinal studies. And basically what longitudinal studies do is they measure how happy a person is. Like if you're all in my study, I would give you all questionnaires to see how happy you are today. And then I would follow you across time, across the next 5 years, 10 years, 30 years, to sort of see how healthy are you. How much pain do you have in your life? How often do you get colds? Do you have any chronic health conditions? And then I see how long you live. And then we can sort of relate happiness at time one to your health at times two and three and four and five. And so this research shows that people who are happy at one point in time have lower incidence of stroke and lower incidence of heart disease many years later. Happier people, if they have heart disease, they're more likely to survive it. If they have lung cancer, they're more likely to survive it 3 years later. And happier people are basically less likely to be on disability years later, and they're less likely to die in a car accident, which is kind of an interesting finding. And they basically live longer. They're more likely to survive. And I want to kind of add a caveat, which is that the researchers in this area don't intend to blame people who are sick to sort of imply that they're just not happy enough, right? If they're happier, then they would be less sick. Obviously, health has many, many sort of multiple determinants, and positive emotions and happiness is one thing that influences our health. So why is happiness good for health? And there are likely many reasons. Happier people have been shown to have healthier habits, right? They're more likely to wear seatbelts, go to doctor's checkups, have exercise more, have better diets, that kind of thing. And also, happier people experience more positive emotions. I've already mentioned that that's basically the hallmark of happiness, is the experience of frequent positive emotions. And positive emotions have been shown to boost people's immune system. So if you experience more joy, more tranquility, your immune system is going to be stronger. So that also protects you from at least certain kinds of infectious diseases. That's kind of like the introduction of sort of why should we care about happiness in the first place. So my talk is going to be divided into four super quick sections. First, I'm going to talk about gratitude interventions and how expressing gratitude might boost happiness. Then I'm going to talk about kindness interventions, how being helpful to others and being of service to others might increase happiness. Then I'm going to talk about social interaction or connection intervention. Just being more social makes people happy. And then finally, in the kind of the fourth part, I'm going to ask some other questions about the importance of fit and culture, and does the pursuit of happiness have backfiring effects? So fortunately, now hundreds of interventions have been conducted to study this question of how can people become happier by practicing different activities. Not all of the studies are perfect. The idea is that we kind of put them all together and we triangulate. These are kind of examples of the kinds of studies that we and sort of other labs have done. So you, typically over the course of 1 to 3 months, we ask participants to engage in different kinds of activities. We randomly assign them to say, act more extroverted or write gratitude letters, and then we compare them to various control groups. And these studies have shown that, you know, deliberately, intentionally trying to engage in activities like these can make people feel happier. So we've been studying in this research the conditions under which sort of these activities work best, kind of like what's the proper dosage of gratitude, or should some certain kinds of people not engage in too many acts of kindness, or is this good for everyone? So that's kind of like the main question, sort of how and why did these happiness-enhancing strategies work? In psychological jargon, we say, what are the moderators and mediators that underlie the success of the pursuit of happiness? But I'm also interested in the conditions under which sometimes the pursuit of happiness might backfire and might actually undermine people's happiness. So that we'll also touch on that sort of at the very, very end. So I want to start by showing you kind of like the grand, sort of a theory that drives all of my research. And so this is basically the model that the sort of asks the how and why questions. And this model basically is sort of asking the question, when you engage in a positive activity like gratitude, why does it make you happier? Why does it lead to increased well-being? What are the moderators and mediators? So these are the above, these are sort of the mechanisms or the why question. Well, because it might lead you to have more positive thoughts or to engage in positive behaviors. And then the bottom, these are what are called moderators. So these are like the features of the happiness seeker that might impact whether the pursuit of happiness is successful. Are they motivated? What culture are they from? What is their personality like? And then also features of the activity itself, like what is its dosage? What is the medium that you're doing it, sort of, et cetera. And then fit between those things is really important. So what I'm going to do is tell you about these experiments that we've done, and then I'll go back to the model and kind of show you how it's relevant. Okay, so that's the how part of the model. So again, the question is sort of like, when you express gratitude, why and how do you get happier from expressing gratitude? So let's start with gratitude, and I'm going to start with, I believe this is the very, very first intervention that my lab ever did. This was back in 1999, 24 years ago. So we asked people to count their blessings. Okay, I think everyone here probably knows what that means to count your blessings or keep a gratitude journal. So basically we asked people once a week, well, I'll get to that, to think about up to 5 things in your life that you're grateful for and sort of to list those things. And you have to kind of be really genuine about that. But we are interested here in kind of the optimal dosage of counting your blessings. So we ask people either to do this once a week or 3 times a week. So either every Sunday night people counted their blessings, or every Tuesday, Thursday, or Sunday night they did it, or we also had a control group. And here's what we found. These are the measures of well-being or happiness that we included. We had a gratitude scale. And I'm happy to answer questions about sort of measurement of happiness. We do it just by asking people self-report questions. Interestingly, in this particular study, We had an interesting result that we didn't expect, actually. So what we found was, if you look at people who counted their blessings once a week, those are the orange bars, they reported becoming more grateful, and they reported becoming happier. But people who counted their blessings three times a week, showed no differences in gratitude or happiness. So we were a little surprised. We thought, well, it may be better to count your blessings more often, but it turns out that perhaps there's kind of an optimal dosage of gratitude. And if you express gratitude too often, it might backfire, it might become a chore, it might lose its sort of meaning or kind of freshness. And interestingly, even though people who counted their blessings 3 times a week didn't actually see any harms, but you can imagine you actually might feel worse if you count your blessings too often and might conclude, you might have trouble thinking of things to be grateful for, you might conclude that you actually don't have much to be grateful for. We have another study that we did more recently where we asked people to think of either 2, 4, 8, 16, or 32 things to be grateful for. And what do you think was like the Goldilocks number of sort of that led to the most positive emotion? So count 2 blessings, 4, 8, 16, or 32. 4, 2, okay. Well, actually, I thought it would be like 3 or 4, but it was 8, actually, interestingly. Yeah, you got it. So more research needs to be done to sort of figure out what kind of the optimal dosage is, and it could be different for different people. So it's not going to be necessarily the same for everyone. Okay, moving on. So yes, so this is just sort of highlighting the once a week condition. And by the way, sometimes people like have approached me and given me different ideas for why this worked. And some people have said like, well, a lot of religious rituals are once a week. Not all of them, but many are. So maybe there's something about reviewing your life once a week that's somehow special and meaningful, or kind of that's like the right time frame. At least for some people, that may be true. Okay, so moving on. So this is an example. You see I have dosage circled. This is an example of a study that showed that dosage plays a role in sort of the impact of a strategy on happiness, on sort of how effective is it going to be. Okay, so moving on. We also did a sort of a counting blessing study at a Japanese engineering company. This time we asked the employees of this company, these were all engineers, once a week, for 10 minutes a week to write about 3 things that went well at work. And this is for 6 weeks. So this is really easy. All of you can do this. Like say every Friday, write about 3 things that went well at work. And now the control group was actually a really good control group. We asked people to list 3 tasks that they completed at work every week. So this is also kind of positive to sort of review something that you finished. But what we found in this study, and actually I don't have the graph, but basically we found that the engineers that wrote three things that went well each week, they got happier, they felt more connected to the other people at the office, and we also found that they were wearing these accelerometers on their badges so we can measure how much they moved at the office. The engineers that wrote about 3 good things at work actually moved more as when they arrived at the office in the morning. So that's interesting. It's like, it's as though they had more energy. Okay, again, moving on. We also have become interested in like not just situations under which gratitude can make people happier, but maybe gratitude can also lead people to want to be a better person. And what I mean by that is, imagine sort of expressing gratitude to say to your mom or to one of your mentors or a teacher. And if you truly feel grateful for the ways that they have supported you and helped you over the years, doesn't it make you wanna pay back? It kind of makes you wanna prove yourself worthy of their efforts. It makes you wanna make them proud. And so we were interested in this question. So we did a study with over 1,000 high school students. So these were 9th and 10th grade students. So they're like 14, 15 years old. In 3 high schools in California and 1 in New York State. And so we asked these students, well, we randomly assigned half of them to write gratitude letters every week over the course of a month to their parents or teachers or coaches. And then the control group, they wrote about their days every week Basically, we build this as like an organizational activity, like try to organize your time by writing about your week, but it was really a control condition. And what we found was, okay, so here it is. Graduate group wrote gratitude letters every week, and the control group wrote about their daily activities for 4 weeks. So first we found that the students who wrote gratitude letters, let me back up. When you look at life satisfaction or motivation across the school year for middle school students, high school students, or college students, you see this decline, right? So they start the school year fairly like, okay, gung-ho, and then they lose satisfaction, lose motivation. And so that's what you see in the control group. So this is a four-month period that I'm showing over there. Over the four-month semester, students are becoming less satisfied with their lives. But the students who wrote gratitude letters for a month at the beginning of this semester, they were buffered from this decline in life satisfaction that you see basically everywhere. So that is pretty cool. And then this gets to what I was talking about. We asked these students, do you want to be a better person? Do you want to improve yourself as a person? And indeed, the students who wrote gratitude letters were more likely to say, yes, I want to improve myself as a person. I want to kind of pay back. And then this is one of my favorite findings. We looked at healthy eating across the semester. And by healthy eating, I mean like eating fruits and vegetables, not eating junk food, not eating like sugars or fast food. Like that's what I was thinking about. No, less fast food. So over the course of the semester, the students who were in the control group, actually their healthy eating kind of decreased, right? They were eating worse, less healthfully, but the students who were gratitude letters kind of maintained or even increased in their healthy eating, kind of wanting to be a good person, wanting to be a healthy person when they were thinking about the people in their lives that supported them and helped them. Okay, so that's about gratitude. So now let's switch gears and talk about how simple acts of kindness can also make people happier. So we've done a number of interventions where we prompt people to engage in acts of kindness and acts of service at home and in the workplace. So in a typical study in this space, I'm kind of tell you about one study. This is a four-week intervention with a two-week follow-up, and we have four conditions. So people are randomly assigned either for the course of 4 weeks to do three acts of kindness for others every week. We usually tell them to do it on a single day. So like every Monday, do three acts of kindness that you don't normally do, and you do this over the course of 4 weeks. Then we have some really nice comparison conditions, or do three acts of kindness for the world. And so that could be like picking up litter or doing something good like for the environment, or do three acts of kindness for yourself. So by acts of kindness for yourself, I mean kind of like self-indulgent things like take a nap or have a piece of chocolate or do something like nice for yourself. So it's also not a bad thing, but people feel good when they kind of do something nice for themselves, and the control group track their daily activities. And this is what we find. So this is happiness or psychological flourishing across the period of the intervention, which is 4 weeks, and the follow-up. And you see in the blue line, these are the two conditions, do acts of kindness for yourself, for others, or the world. And you see that those participants are reporting more happiness, more flourishing across time, and even across the two-week follow-up, they're still feeling happier. The control group and the acts of kindness for yourself group did not change in happiness across time. And that's sort of nice to show, especially because the acts of kindness for self also feel good, but those good feelings didn't translate sort of a month or 6 weeks later. So this is an example of intervention where we looked at this one dimension, which is whether an activity is directed towards the self or towards someone else. And we basically find that it's kind of interesting, it's almost ironic, that if you want to make yourself happier, you should do something to make someone else happier, right? So these are people who are trying to help someone else. So now doing acts of kindness can also have benefits beyond just feeling good, beyond happiness. So for example, we used the exact same design to do a study where we partnered with an immunologist to see if doing acts of kindness can also affect your body, basically. So let me show you that study. we looked at what's called immune gene expression. So in this study, we had the exact same design as the one before. So we asked people either to do acts of kindness for others or for the world or for yourself or keep track of your activities over 4 weeks. And then we measured gene expression. And so these are the findings that we have. So basically, what they are showing is that only the group that did acts of kindness for others showed changes in their gene expression associated with a healthier immune profile. So this represents downregulation of pro-inflammatory genes. So think more inflammation is bad, right? So you want less pro-inflammatory gene expression. So only the group that did acts of kindness for others showed less pro-inflammatory gene expression over time. And I didn't mention, how did we know what their gene expression was? We collected blood from them before and after the intervention, and my collaborator assayed the blood samples. I'm not a biologist, but he is, so he knew how to do that. So that was pretty cool. Okay, so we found that kindness is powerful and really positive. Can we make it contagious? So then we went to do a study to see whether both happiness and kindness can sort of multiply and spread across a social network. So we went to the Coca-Cola offices in Madrid, Spain, to do the study. And what we did in this study is we assigned certain people at the workplace to be givers. And so if I told, say I picked 12 people here and I said, you guys have to be the givers, you need to do acts of kindness to your colleagues in your workplace, and you're given actual list of people in your workplace to do acts of kindness for. We actually gave them pretty long lists of like 12 people, because we didn't want it to be awkward, right? If you get a name of someone, you're like, I don't know, that would be weird for me to do something nice for them. So you can kind of choose who you wanted to be kind to. So there are the givers, and then there were the receivers. The receivers in the workplace, again, these are the Coca-Cola offices in Madrid, they didn't know that they were on these lists or that they were in an experiment. They just knew people were suddenly like doing acts of kindness for them, and then the observers were sort of everyone else in the office. And so what we found basically was that everyone got happier in the office, the givers and the receivers and the observers. Interestingly, the happiness or like depression levels of the givers sort of lasted longer. So it is true, like 'tis better to give than to receive, because the givers had sort of more durable benefits, but the observers also benefited and paid it forward. So the receivers paid it back, and the observers, the witnesses, you're sort of in the office and you're seeing people doing nice things for each other, they paid it forward. There's an emotion that some psychologists study called elevation. I don't know if anyone has heard of that. So elevation is the emotion that you feel when you see, like you're driving by and you see someone stand by the side of the road helping someone, like doing some kind of incredible act of kindness, and you feel this like warmth in your chest, right? Like this feeling, and it's called elevation, that feels really good. And so people felt elevated when they saw generosity, and then they were moved to also do the same, to pay it forward. Okay, so we did all these interventions involving acts of kindness. In psychology, we call this pro-social behavior. So pro-social behavior, any behavior that's sort of done to benefit someone else, is the opposite of anti-social behavior. And so we thought, well, maybe all these pro-social behavior interventions make people happier because they're also social interventions, right? When you help others, you almost always interact with another human. Yes, you can anonymously donate money to charity, but that happens rarely, certainly happens very rarely in our studies. And even then, you could like imagine you're sort of visualizing, you know, like those people that you're helping, you know, with your donation. So they're almost all pro-social acts are also social. So we decided to do a study where we could compare pro-social and social acts. So we did a study with it's over 500, employees. And we asked them to either engage over a course of a month again in 3 kind acts each week, just like in the other studies I just showed you, or 3 social behaviors each week. So like at the office, you might sort of chat with a colleague you know, something maybe you don't normally do, sort of three more social interactions each week, or you might call up a friend. So you engage in three more social interactions over the course of 4 weeks. And this is what we found in terms of how connected people felt over the course of the study. And so interesting, and the control group, by the way, the control group was our usual control group, where every week we asked people to try to organize their time by writing about what they did that week. So it's also kind of a positive activity, but it's not social or pro-social. So basically, then we found, what we found here is that both the groups that engaged in social acts and pro-social acts, they reported the same amount of sort of feelings of connection. And so that actually was kind of what we expected. We thought that both kindness and just social behavior would be equally connecting. But also interestingly, we found that two factors really matter to sort of how connected people felt. So the y-axis here is magnitude of connection. So let me explain that. When I'm like at the office and I decide to help one of my colleagues, and let's say I bring them a cup of coffee, when I get my coffee, kind of unexpectedly, I know what kind of coffee they like, or maybe I help them with a computer problem, okay? We ask them, how did you feel when you were helping that colleague? Like, did you feel in sync with them? Did you feel a sense of warmth? Did you feel a sense of mutual trust with them? So that's how we're measuring connection. And same thing for the social behavior. Like when you were chatting with your colleague by the water cooler or with the barista or with your friend on the phone, how connected did you feel? And so basically what we found is that the medium mattered, because we also asked people to do some of these behaviors online. And so you can see that the three right bars, when people did these acts in person or by video chat or by phone, that's when you had the strongest amount of connection, more than through text or email or web or social media. And I should say, even like social media was still connecting, like even if you're connecting over social media, but not as connecting as in person or video chat or phone. And by the way, our conclusion was, what mattered actually was voice. Do you see that what is in person, video chat, and phone have in common? All three of them have voice in common. So when you hear the voice. And then the other thing that we found was that it mattered who you're behaving towards, the act of kindness or the social act. Basically, the closer you are to the person, if it's a partner or best friend, close colleague. Now we're like, well, that's interesting. So there were no differences between like social and pro-social acts. So we thought, is that really true? So we wanted to do a stronger study to look to see whether there's something special about social acts and kind acts. So we did an experiment where we also asked people to do kind acts for others and to do social acts, but we had some really strong comparison conditions. So we also asked people to do kind acts for others or the self, and we also asked people to engage in open-minded acts, that is sort of to be open to like art and literature and music. So notice that all four conditions are all positive, right? They're all doing something positive. And then we asked people to tell us, how did you feel while you were doing that helpful thing, while you were, again, like complimenting someone or chatting with a neighbor or going to a museum and looking at a painting? How did you feel? So first we asked them, how competent did you feel? And interestingly, people who did acts of kindness for others reported feeling more competent or sort of efficacious, more capable than relative to the other groups. Again, all the groups were very positive activities. So competence was higher. And the second thing was meaning. This is actually one of my favorite findings. The group that did acts of kindness reported having more meaning when they did the acts of kindness relative to the group that was just more social or more, or did something nice for themselves or more open-minded. But interestingly, with feelings of connection, those were the same for people who did acts of kindness for others or social acts. That makes sense. Again, just like in the previous study, it's equally connecting whether you're helping or just socially interacting. Okay, so then we're like, wow, so social interaction, just pure social interaction, is really powerful. That maybe all we have to do is just like be more social and then we'll be happier. I mean, that makes sense. I mean, I believe in connection as being the key to, you know, very critical to happiness. So it makes sense to us, but we were almost sort of surprised at how powerful it was. But we did a study to test this where we asked people to simply act more extroverted for a week. Okay, so imagine if you're in the study and I tell you, so what, today's Wednesday, like next week, just act more extroverted than you normally do. Now, you can define what that means. You don't have to go be the life of a party. You could just be a little more social, just a little more extroverted. And then for another week, to act more introverted than you normally do. So now we didn't use those words extrovert, introverted, because those words have sort of connotations in our culture. So we didn't want to use those terms. So we just asked people during the week that they acted extroverted to act more talkative, assertive, and spontaneous. And those are those facets of extroversion. And then during the introversion week, we asked people to act more deliberate, quiet, and reserved. And what kind of shocked us, well, first of all, people did actually act more extroverted during the extroverted week versus the introverted week. They acted less extroverted, so the study kind of worked. But then when we actually looked at how they felt, across all the different variables we looked at, because we didn't only look at this is positive emotion, we looked at flow and, you know, engagement, connection. Basically, everyone, both the introverts and the extroverts, felt happier during the week that they acted more extroverted than the week that they acted more introverted, like a lot happier. We got the biggest effects we've ever gotten in my career. And so that was surprising, especially the fact that introverts also got happier during the extroversion week. So I'm happy to talk about that more, but that was really sort of surprising to us. So then we also were interested in the idea of fit. So not every activity, not every sort of way of pursuing happiness is going to be effective for every person. So a long time ago, we've done a couple of studies like this, but I'm going to show you a study that we did with, like, this is, do you remember this? This is like the old iPhone. So some colleagues of mine created an app called Live Happy that was based on my book, The How of Happiness, and it was actually one of the first happiness, maybe the first happiness apps in the App Store, but that was a long time ago when the App Store was a lot smaller. And so basically, users were able to use different, like their phone to write a gratitude journal or savor a photo in their photo album or to set goals or to do acts of kindness. So it's kind of a cool, actually. There's lots of apps out there now, but I actually think that this app that's no longer available was actually a really cool one. And we asked people, like, how natural and enjoyable and meaningful was it for you to do this activity? So then we could look at fit. Like, does it really fit your personality and your goals? And so we basically found that there was different fit on average for different people. So best possible self was like looking at yourself in the future, being optimistic. That people really like that one. Interestingly, expressing gratitude was the lowest fit sort of on average. But it doesn't actually matter what the fit is on average. What matters is what the fit is with you. And what we found was that the higher the fit with a particular activity, the more likely users tried that activity and the more they got happier from it. So basically, fit really matters. Fit is critical, and there's different kinds of fit. There's fit with your personality, with your goals, your culture, your strength, et cetera. So fit matters. Okay, so basically, that kind of covers a lot of my research. I just want to end with one last slide. And this is the question that I kind of alluded to before, and that is, can the pursuit of happiness sometimes backfire? Like, are there ways that we can engage in some of these activities, including gratitude, including kindness, including engaging social interactions that might actually undermine our happiness? And there are situations like that. So these are sort of different categories, and I have a whole chapter on this if you're interested. So starting with the first, activity overdose. So you could kind of do something too much. You can express gratitude too much. Can you be too kind? Yes, you could be too kind. And there are people who are so generous in giving to others that they neglect their own self-care. And so they can actually be harmed by being too generous, right? So overdosing, it can definitely be a problem. Extremes of motivation, can you be too obsessed with happiness? Yes, right? You can be too preoccupied with becoming a happier person. If you ask yourself too often, am I happy yet? Am I happy yet? Am I happy yet? Kind of measure it too much. Hold yourself to the standard. That can also backfire. Person activity misfit, like we did a study with people who were depressed, and when they wrote gratitude letters, it actually made them less happy. And so that's another thing to consider. And some mental health professionals also have told me that gratitude doesn't always work for people who are really depressed. They feel like, I can't do this, or I don't know I don't have anything to be grateful for, or they might feel guilty that they haven't expressed gratitude, or even more dangerous, people who are very depressed feel like that they're a burden on others, right? And actually feeling like you're a burden is a risk factor for suicidality. And so you don't want to ask people who are severely depressed to express gratitude because they might actually feel more that they're a burden. And so that actually can be very harmful. So I just wanted to bring this up because it's not all like, rainbows and kittens, right? That you have to sort of be aware of some of the dangers sometimes. And then the social cost of positive activities, the observers, sometimes observers of what happiness seekers are doing might feel envious or they might feel, I don't know, embarrassed. Targets of gratitude can feel embarrassed sometimes or are uncomfortable. So that's also something that we could keep in mind. Okay, so basically, after almost 35 years of research on this topic, I've kind of like landed on a cliche, which is that other people matter, which is that connection is the key to happiness. So if you want to be happier, and if you want to have the benefits of happiness, like more creativity, productivity, better health, better relationships, you want to focus on sort of other people, spending time with other people, focusing on how other people have supported you, and supporting other people through acts of kindness, because connection really matters. So that's my conclusion. Thank you.
Please visit myjli.com to learn more about JLI's multiple educational offerings.